This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. 8 months into production of his Academy Award-nominated documentary, All That Breathes, Delhi-based filmmaker Shaunak Sen scrapped all the footage he had shot and started over. Then COVID hit. Fighting through several starts and stops paid off in the end, with a premiere at Sundance, followed by a grand jury prize, and then a big win at Cannes. The documentary follows Nadeem and Mohammed, who run a bird clinic and rehabilitation center in their basement. Mohammed explains why he and his brother have been doing this work for the past 20 years. Our fights. Don't think that they're because of petty financial reasons, or that it's an ego thing, or an emotional issue. The real reason's up here. What's happening with the birds? The air, the sky. Our fights are just a symptom of something much larger. I read that you dropped the first 8 months of your footage. Is that true? I mean, that almost made me feel pain physically.
It is, but and thank you for reading this comprehensively. But it sounds heroic and romantic in hindsight, but I had no other option then. When we started, I was shooting handheld. So all our material initially was in a more classic kind of a verite, handheld, observational, rough style. But I soon realized that when it's handheld camera, the tone is often a bit anxious or restless, you know, because the camera embodies in a felt and fleshy manner the camera person themselves. So if we had to essentially figure out a new tone, and I realized that the characters were themselves very contemplative and meditative folks, and the film had to have a form that allowed you to contemplate things and think about things, and it had to be beautiful. So we completely had to discard the handheld stuff because we moved into a more tripoded, flowy kind of a style, and there's no way one can use the rough, grimy handheld style and the smooth aesthetic style. So we had to choose one or the other, which meant the hard decision of saying goodbye to two hard drives full of footage, but it had to be done.
And did the brothers turn to you and say, what? How much longer are you going to be here?
Well, the brothers would always be like, oh, how? And after a while, I feel like we became a wallpaper of their lives. You know, it's like they sort of took us as a kind of element in their lives that will be there for a long time. So it was often the case that we would, you know, it's like we shot for, and you, human beings also get very habituated to being witnessed, you know, and you become a part of, like, we were pretty much a part of their familial setup. So any kind of event or anything that is happening, they would themselves call and say, look, this is happening. Would you like to come? You know, so the brothers were, I think, a bit surprised about how long it was taking, but they were very supportive. Also, more importantly, I think it was also an enjoyable process often, you know, we were also friends. So that was a good thing.
Now, the outside world, in terms of political reality or on-the-ground reality, it comes into the film, but indirectly. I'm not any expert on politics in India, but it seems very much that India is going through some challenging times, as we have been in this country in terms of politics. You're shooting during these Delhi riots of 2020, and that sort of seeps into the film, but you don't choose to explain what is going on. I mean, this has to do with the attitude of the Indian government towards Muslims, which the brothers are, but you sort of let it be in the film, but you don't go through any kind of explanation or discussion.
Well, the thing, when we began the film, it was meant to only and primarily be an ecological film and about the work of the brothers. But the thing is that the city of Delhi was obviously going through a very turbulent time, and there was a fair degree of social unease. And so much of it was happening right next to the brothers' house. But the brothers themselves are, you know, you have to trust the integrity of the lives that you're shooting. And the brothers are not very politically minded. I mean, they would say the stuff between humans and birds is as political also, which I think it is as well. But they're not conventionally political beings. And as such, I wanted to not, like, you know, it was tempting to point the camera streetwards, but I had to stick to the integrity of what I was shooting. Having said that, the outside world would often leak in small resonances, you know, in small murmurs of it. So a character goes to the balcony and you hear the audio of a crowd nearby, or a character is watching a video of clearly trouble in the city, and you only hear the audio of it. So I thought it would be best to very obliquely and tangentially, just like we witnessed it in their house. So we had to basically figure out a film grammar in which it was suggested that something else is going on, but not make it front and center.
The other thing that was happening while you were shooting was COVID, which, I mean, you glimpse somebody in a mask at some point, but with the air quality, maybe you don't know quite what's going on, but you'd have to switch cinematographers. I don't know. COVID affected your production, right? I had to.
Profoundly. Also, I came down with a very bad case of it. It did affect us really badly because we had to have long stretches of time when we were not shooting. But what it also did, and like you correctly said, our German DP had to leave the country very urgently. One shoot schedule got disrupted midway. So it was very disruptive. But you also start, when you've receded into the inner confines of your house with nothing outside, life takes on a more somber, meditative quality generally. So I think it helped me ingest and marinate in footage. And personally speaking, the off time or the non-shooting time changed some of the tonal quality of the film, which is good.
Yes, I guess that's one good thing about that nightmare. So you go to Denmark to work with an editor at a certain point, Charlotte Munch Benson.
Yes, correct.
You've mentioned that she was a dancer and you felt that she was almost choreographing in the film.
Indeed, we were fortunate to, me and the co-editor Vedant Joshi were fortunate to go to Copenhagen to cut with her. I was in awe of her work because I'd seen, you know, these monumental works like Act of Killing and Truffle Hunters and so on. And she has a completely different style or approach to material than I do. I tend to be very, perhaps too much, cerebral and interpretative and top heavy. Whereas she prescribes to what she calls an emotional edit. You know, she keeps, like, every time she would say, yes, but what does it feel like? Like, forget what you think of it. What does it feel like? And that's something that I really learned and imbibed via her, because essentially I tend to be like, okay, this shot after this shot after this shot means this. Whereas for her, it would often be like, forget what it means. Just tell me what it feels like. So it's a kind of stomach editing, you know, which I just hadn't ever experienced. And I think the film was infinitely richer because of this.
And you went to Cannes after Sundance. So you won a prize at Sundance and went to Cannes. And Cannes doesn't normally, I don't think they're so enthusiastic about documentaries usually.
Yes. I think we were very fortunate. And Cannes was kind enough to program us there because we did not have a physical premiere, right? Sundance was a virtual premiere. So in all senses, Cannes was the physical premiere of the film, which is obviously extraordinarily special. But that festival was interesting because you're slotted. It doesn't have an independent documentary section on its own. You're in the mix with fiction films. So it was a very unique and personally for me, almost a euphoric experience to show there, because a lot of my utter heroes were showing at the same time.
So now you've won these awards in Sundance and Cannes. You're nominated for BAFTA, DGA Award, an Academy Award. How is this changing your life? Is this going to make it easier to fund the next one? Are people already coming with bags of money, hoping for the next project?
The change is so monumental that I can't even tell how much the coordinates of my life have indeed shifted. I come from a world which is very, very far away from all of this, not just in terms of the glitz and the bells and whistle, but also in terms of pure visibility of the films I make. We did not get a big distributor for Cities of Sleep, my last film. So I don't take distribution as a given at all. So this, all of it feels almost unreal, to be honest. Many projects have been offered. I think people come with bags full of projects more than money.
More than money, right.
Exciting. But I think, I mean, what I need to do after the whole dizzying upheaval of the Oscar campaign gets done, I will unplug and go off somewhere remote for 2 to 3 months and slowly start excavating or mining ideas again and thinking about what I want to do next.
I imagine that you will need the rest too. Shaunak Sen produced and directed All That Breathes. The film is now streaming on HBO Max. Thank you very much for talking to us today.
Thank you so much.
And that's The Business. Joshua Farnham produced and edited today's program with help this week from Matt Schwartz and Ray Guarna, who also mixed the show. To hear more episodes of The Business, as well as other great KCRW entertainment podcasts, head to kcrw.com/FYC. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.